Well, hey, folks, welcome to the latest episode of the Texas Titans podcast. I'm your host, Jason Wright. Today, I've got a great show for you. I sat down with Jake Schick, the CEO of 22Kill. Why is 22Kill named 22Kill? On average, 22 veterans take their lives per day. Now, think about that. 22 veterans per day take their life. And so 22Kill was established to help with suicide prevention and counseling services to help our heroes that have come back from battle and are dealing with some demons that they've brought back with them. And Jake Schick is leading the charge at 22Kill and doing great work. Also, 22Kill helps first responders as well. And so today I sit down and I talk to Jake about what they're doing at 22Kill, as well as his personal story. Jake came back from war with one less foot, a severely maimed and gnarled left hand from being blown up in a Humvee. And one of the coolest things that Jake told me and that he tells in his personal story about his service is that he says, as it relates to every American, he would look you in the eye and say, you're worth it. You're worth his right foot. You're worth the pain and the suffering that he went through. He had every single rib in his body broken. And he would say to you, as his fellow American, you're worth it. It's a great story. I think you're going to thoroughly enjoy it. This conversation I had with a true American hero, although I can guarantee you right now, Jake Schick would never want to be called that. So please sit back and enjoy the story of 22Kill, the great work they're doing, and my friend, our hero, a Marine, hoorah, Jake Schick. Thanks, folks.
All right, well, I have pushed the proverbial red button, brother. We are recording Jake Schick. What's up, my man?
Feels good to go hot once again.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, I have been looking forward to this. I mean, like we were talking about, kind of this little Forrest Gump-like adventure that I find my life on these days has led me to the offices of 22Kill, where you guys are doing some amazing work. So the way I want to break this down, though, because I've heard you speak, and your personal story is every bit as compelling as the organization that now you are CEO of, which is doing great work that I cannot wait for the Texas Titan audience to not only find out about, and I'm not even going to wait till the end for the ask. I'm going to tell all of the listeners right now, please go to 22Kill's site, learn about this organization, learn about the work that they're doing for our veterans that have come back and have given so much for us. So I want to go ahead and put that plug in right now, in the middle and at the end.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Yeah, absolutely. Because it takes a lot of time, effort, and resources to do what we do on a daily basis. So, you know, all the help's appreciated. And if it wasn't for the individual donor, we wouldn't, we wouldn't be where we are.
Right.
So that I'm grateful, we're grateful, and, you know, all the clients that we help are very grateful.
All right, brother. Well, okay, so you come to Texas. Now, like I said, I'm claiming you as a Texas Titan, whether somebody likes it or not. But you come to us by way of Louisiana, but you spent the better part of your life in Texas, right?
I got here as fast as I could.
Awesome. Exactly. Yeah. And so what I want to do is I want to start because I know that military tradition started early in your family. So let's just get into it with your desire at an early age, and almost to the surprise of some family, as I recall, from listening to your story a while back in Texarkana. So let's just start there with how Jake Schick becomes a Marine.
Sure. So growing up, I was very close to my grandmother and my father's mother, and we were extremely, extremely close. Instead of going to hunt with my dad, my older brother, you know, I'd get the option, you want to stay with Mimi or do you want to go, you know, duck hunt? And at a young age, it was, I want to go be with Mimi because if I'm hunting, I'm not getting the attention or, you know, I'm getting picked on and teased. And then with Mimi, you know, I was, as far as she was concerned, I was her only grandchild. Right. And so, you know, I got very close to her and she told me all about my grandfather, who was a Marine in World War II and fought on Iwo Jima and Island Hopi campaign in Korea. And you know, she would just always light up and her chest would swell with pride when she would talk about him. And unfortunately, he passed a couple years before I was born. But that was the main driving force of me at a very young age, around the age of 8, deciding, okay, you know, I need to be United States Marine, because if she's going to talk about me like that, mm-hmm. I need to earn the title.
Yeah.
And on top of that, my uncle, who's my dad's oldest brother, because my dad's older brother, my dad's the baby of 3 boys, and my dad's middle brother joined, and he served during Vietnam. And so it was something that, look, I was just very convicted that this is what I was going to do, come hell or high water. You know, I remember being 5 years old, sitting in Red's house down the street from my Mimi's house in Louisiana, and he was a combat photographer, World War II, and looking at pictures of a concentration camp of just bodies stacked on top of bodies that were clearly just emaciated. And I remember it hitting me at such a young age that, you know, I need to do something. Mm-hmm. I need to do my part to make sure this never happens again.
Yeah.
I need to give something to make sure that we don't have to see these atrocities.
Yeah.
And so, man, it just grew and grew and grew. And, you know, as soon as I got to Texas and, you know, luckily became a decent athlete, and it was just something that the patriotism just runs thick in our blood. And it's something that I'll never apologize for, something I'm very proud of.
Yeah.
And something that I'll never change. And I think it's safe to say that, you know, my boys are going to be very much patriotic, proud, freedom loving Americans.
Well, that's one of the things that I find most compelling about your story, Jake, is that, like, when we're young, you know, I mean, I was that, I mean, my brother and I, we quote unquote played army, played war our whole lives, because we thought it was cool. You know, we would go, we'd watch Taps, we'd watch, you know, whatever, you know. So whatever, going back old school, man, To Hell and Back was my favorite movie as a kid. You know, Audie Murphy, another incredible Texan. And absolutely. And so, but you, it was, I think, much deeper than that at a very early age, as far as understanding what it meant to be, to actually defend the country. It wasn't just play for you. It was that patriotism that ran deep. And it sounds like some of that started with your grandmother and finding out your family history. So when did that start becoming apparent to the family that we're probably going to have this conversation one day with Jake? I mean, did you, you know, kind of walk me through? And I want to go to the football, because I know that was a big piece of whenever you became an athlete, right? Mm-hmm. And then just start, kind of take me through that.
Sure. You know, I think that my family was surprised, mainly my father, but because of football. And I think that but no one was shocked.
Yeah.
And because if any of not only my siblings or my cousins, if anybody was going to serve, I think everybody knew it was going to be me.
Yeah, right, right.
And so no one was shocked, but I think that there was definitely concern with my father, but for good reason, which I didn't understand at the time, you know, because I was young.
Yep.
I was 18, 19-year-old kid. You don't know anything.
Yep.
You think you know everything.
You think you
know
but nothing. You don't. Right.
But when, you know, luckily, I started playing football at a very young age. It was the sport that I loved, and it was my thing. I mean, my dad, my older brother, baseball players, and I was like, yeah, I respect the game. It is an art, but it's also equivalent to watching paint dry for me.
Right.
And so it just wasn't my thing. I needed action. I needed, and good news with football, like, anybody can run into anybody.
Yep.
If you're willing to sacrifice your body, you can play that sport.
Right.
And so, you know, but I also had a lot of motivation in always chasing my older brother, who was just this God-given athlete, who just would step on a field of play or a court, and it was just natural.
Yeah.
And it pissed me off so much because I felt like I was always chasing him, which was great. It was a great motivator to make me work harder and, you know, to be bigger, stronger, faster. And, you know, got to high school in Coppell, Texas, and you know, that's where I really started to flourish, really in eighth grade. and then ended up working really, really hard mm-hmm. to play football because my love of the game, the love of the team aspect, and you know, having to rely on teammates and just it being a team sport. I think you right. grow so much as an individual having to be involved in that environment.
Yep.
And so it was. I was so grateful for it, and you know, it's probably not probably. It's the main reason I graduated high school.
Yep.
It's Texas football.
Yep.
And look, I probably missed more days of high school than I attended. I was that guy where if I was done football season, I was like, okay, my work is done here.
Right.
And, you know, luckily I was surrounded by people who were mentors to me, both male and female, that not only were teachers, but, you know, school counselors, principal, mm-hmm. to school cop, and that really just looked out for me and took yeah. care of me and made sure that I saw it through.
Yeah.
And because they knew that, you know, I had some childhood trauma. You know, I didn't have a cookie cutter upbringing, and nobody does.
Right.
And I think they could see the effects of that.
Yeah.
You know, coming from a divorced family. And but it was, yeah, it was beginning of my senior year. I was already 18 and walked into the recruiter's office and said, you know, hey, I'm here to sign up and join the Marine Corps. And he said, not like that, you're not, because I had a brace on my right leg because yeah. I had torn my MCL yeah. like the second week of the season. And I said, well, you know, what's it going to take? Mm-hmm. And he said, well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to give you 2 weeks. And if you're on the field, I'll come watch you play in 2 weeks. And my trainer told me, like, Jake, there's no way. This is a 4 to 6 week at best thing. And
right.
of course, me being me, I was like, nope, I'm playing in 2 weeks.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's exactly what I did. And so Staff Sergeant Norberg came and talked to me, and he said, after the game, he came down the sideline, he said, be at my office Monday. I said, all right, roger that. I'll be there.
Right.
And went and signed up and told him, you know, he said, hey, you know, we got to take the ASVAB, and then, you know, we'll pick from these military occupation specialties that the Marine Corps offers. And I said, no, I don't need to pick. I'm going infantry. And he said, well, you have three options. And so that's, so I said, all right, got it. And I wrote infantry three times. And he's like, Jake, you can't do that. And I was like, well, okay.
And where does that come from, Jake? Because that's one of the things about you that I absolutely love is that, you know, I can tell you love discipline. You're determined. Mm-hmm. You know, where does that come from? Just talk to me about that.
Yeah, look, I had my upbringing. My father's second to none, and he's, you know, self-made executive banker, started as a window teller, the epitome of work ethic, mm-hmm. Really just instilled in me and my siblings that you get what you work for.
Yep.
Nothing is given.
Yep.
You know, free is a made-up word.
Yep.
It's non-existent.
Yeah.
And it just really instilled that in us in a very early age. And, you know, I think that clearly I'm biased because of, you know, my bloodline, and I'm very proud of my last name and where we come from and the things we've accomplished. But I just really think it's ingrained. It's, you know, it is a part of our DNA makeup that it's, you know, and it has its negatives.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
yeah.
it has its negatives. And I mean, God knows I've got a very colorful past, but I'm not sorry about any of it because right. life's too short for regret.
Right.
And shame and guilt. And besides that, as a believer, like those aren't, that's not ours.
Mm-hmm.
It's not ours to bear. It's not our burden to bear those feelings.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? And so it was between, you know, being raised by my father and my grandmother and aunts and uncles and, you know, all the mentors I had, neighbors, and mm-hmm. that, you know, my father always made sure that we were in very productive, healthy environments is if he had control over it.
Right.
And so that was one of the things that I think contributed to me being a go-getter, and, you know, and that carried over definitely to not only my high school football and high school. I was always the guy, especially in the Marines, where if, you know, if there's a problem, you're supposed to utilize the chain of command and all those things. And I never did that. I always went straight to the top, and you know, we call it standing tall before the man.
Yeah.
And if I was standing tall before the man, I was either in trouble or trying to get something done for the Marines.
Right.
It was, and both of those happen often. Yeah. And it was, because my thing is I just like to get things done.
Yeah.
And I like to make sure no matter what, no matter how hard it is, no matter how painful, the ball's moving forward.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, because as long as you're falling forward, you're moving in the right direction.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter if you're falling or not.
Yeah.
As long as you're going forward, you're moving in the right direction.
Yeah.
And so I think it's also, I think that comes from a lot of the hardship and trials and tribulations that I had as a kid, and seeing that being static and not being mobile and isolating doesn't solve anything.
Yeah, yeah. I think I can totally relate to that because, you know, I remember whenever, and so my childhood, same thing, you know, divorced when I was young, my mom and dad did. And there were people at times because I literally would go kind of from the wrong side of the tracks to the right side of the tracks on a weekly basis at one point in my childhood. And people would, I remember teachers would come up to me and go, wow, we're, you know, it's so good you turned out the way you did. And I never knew what that meant. Cause to me, it's like, I wish there's a study, and I'm sure there's plenty of research on this, why guys like us that can be thrown in imperfect circumstances, but you've got a choice, right? Even at a young age, you realize, well, yeah, but you still, like, I remember when I was growing up, the Just Say No campaign was out. You know, and you know, a lot of people laughed about Nancy Reagan's deal about not doing drugs. And all it took for me was, I remember thinking this as a child, well, if they're making this big of a deal out of it, it must be bad. So let's just not do that, you know? And even with, and I will also say that even with a childhood that was less than perfect, and by the way, I don't care how many problems I had. I look back on my childhood with fondness, and I had a father that, while no father is perfect, at least I had him as an example to look to as to, you know, I said it in the last podcast, my father was the one that taught me your word is your bond. That you, same thing as you, you know, the harder you work, the luckier you get, you know? And so I just wish there was something, because there are guys that have been in our situations that take the other route. As a matter of fact, I've got members of my family that they took that route, and I just don't get it. So I admire the fact that at a very young age you saw what mattered and what you clung to what your dad was teaching you, and then you executed on it, which I think is just, it's awesome.
Yeah, you know, and it's look, it's not all rainbows, roses, lollipops, and unicorns either. You know, I remember the Say No to Drugs campaign, and but you know, here I am, a recovering drug addict and alcoholic, and it's like, that's the thing. And when I said, you know, it has its negatives to have the attributes that my bloodline's got, you know, I always say from trials and tribulation and controversy comes character, but what you do with that character is up to you.
Exactly, and that's why, because I remember that from your story, I'm like, but you had that DNA, and you had your dad's discipline to cling to, which I think is so important. Right?
I completely agree. Yeah, I mean, you have to have the lessons to fall back on, just like you have to have past experiences that you have to fall back on. And people say, you know, the past is the past. Don't look to that. You're never going to grow. You know, here's the future. And my thing is no. I mean, both of which is always should be within arm's length, because you have to draw from one in order to productively get through the other.
I love that.
You know, and the only in between, you know, both arms, I mean, the only obstacle is your head.
I like
your brain.
I love that.
So you got to wire that tight and make sure, because it's the most valuable weapon you'll ever possess.
Amen. Amen. So now you are a Marine. You've enlisted, and you're going infantry. You decided that. So kind of walk us through that, and I want to be respectful of your time, because I know Mrs. Schick is sitting right here beside me, and she's got you on a schedule, and so but I want you to tell us about you get into the Marines, and then I want to make sure you have time for that fateful day that obviously would change your life forever.
Yeah, it's look, I remember going to MEPS, and I actually went in the Marine Corps on the buddy system with a guy that played linebacker with our team, and was one of my best friends in the world. He's since passed, and I remember trying to talk him into going to infantry, and he was just not doing it. He was not doing it. And so, you know, I knew to pick my battles, but we went and ate at this place that, where we knew they would serve beer to us, because, even though we were underage. Because it was like, look, we're about to go to Marine Corps boot camp, and you know, there's no dip, no beer, no anything. You know, all fun is out the window.
Right.
And so we went to this place, and I'll never forget that night. I cherish that night. I mean, especially now, since after having to bury him. But it's it was one of those things where you don't sleep. I didn't sleep a second the night before I got on the plane. You know, get on the plane, fly into San Diego, and I remember flying in, and you can see MCRD, Marine Corps Recruit Depot, San Diego, right there. Mm-hmm. I mean, from the runway.
Yeah.
And I remember coming out of the airport and all the police, because that's what we're called, or recruits at that point, filing up, and you know, people just, you know, these guys are yelling, and just a lot of confusion and controlled chaos. I remember getting on the bus, and the bus ride taking like 3 hours.
Right.
And I was like, I look at my buddy Danny, I'm like, dude, I'm fairly certain that this base is right next to this airport. This is some type of building up emotion, evolution. Uh-huh. And I said, so the games have already started.
Yeah.
So let's get ahead of it.
Right.
You know, and of course we pull in, and this huge Marine walks on and politely asks us to get off of his bus. It's not how it happened. And so, you know, we file off the bus and we get on, you know, the famous or infamous, however you want to look at, yellow footprints. And I remember standing on these yellow footprints. And that's when it really hit me that no matter what, I will earn this title.
Yeah.
Because I got to think to myself, did my grandfather, who fought on Iwo Jima, stand on these same yellow footprints?
That's awesome.
And so I was so convicted and had so much motivation that I knew it was either go home in a box or go home a United States Marine.
Right.
Those are my options.
Yeah.
And I was good with either.
Yeah.
Because I was so convicted that this is going to happen no matter what. And if I make my mind up on something and I'm that convicted about it, I mean, it's more than likely it's going to happen.
Well, and let's touch on that a minute, because we brought it up a couple of times just so that the listener understands. First of all, if there is a conflict of any kind, the Marines are going. But that's I think pretty much most everybody understands. Marines are going to lead the way into battle.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's infantry. So it's like a double whammy. It's like, yeah, you're a Marine, so you're going to go fight. And by the way, if you're an infantry, then make no mistake about it.
Oh yeah, you're going to
get in the fight.
You're going to get to utilize the tools you've been trained.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, and that's for me, because when I signed up, you know, it was peacetime. It was 2000, and then Christmas came, 2001. Graduated May, June, 2001.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I wasn't due to ship till like December, January time frame. Well, 9/11 happened.
Yeah, wow.
And I remember watching the second plane hit the South Tower, and I was like, Danny was over at my house. I remember watching that, and I looked at him, and I said, we're going to war.
Wow.
And not 15 minutes later, my phone rang, and it was my recruiter, and he said, hey, you're a combat billet. You're going. It won't be December. If you're a combat billet, we all know we're going to war. Got to get you trained up, and so you're going. Anyone with a combat billet. And I was like, okay, all right, let's do it.
Wow.
And, you know, luckily, I still got to go with Danny because he was artillery. And so, you know, it was one of those things that once you got there and you felt, for me anyway, like as soon as we got off that bus and stood on the footprints and I had all these thoughts and emotions, like you can feel, I felt the energy and the spirits of these Marines that came before us. And I mean, all that did, I just got goosebumps thinking about it. Like all that did was just motivate me more. And it was like, you know what? There's nothing special about me. There's nothing special about anything I've been through, about my pain and suffering. And that's really where I accepted that fact was in Marine Corps boot camp, because there was nothing special about it. All I had to do was look to my left and my right. That guy was suffering just as much as me, if not more.
Yeah.
And so, but what makes the Marine Corps the best in the world, put simply, is that in no other branch, tier one or otherwise, can argue with this. We adhere to tradition more than any other branch. Mm. We are very, very proud of our Marine Corps. You know, we're the smallest. We are the least well-funded. You know, we are very good at accomplishing the impossible with secondhand things.
Right.
And but it's the pride and the tradition that I think is why, you know, we're still undefeated.
Yeah.
And so it was something that was just a drive, and they pound that in your head, you know, and especially being in boot camp a month after 9/11, mm-hmm. is if Marine Corps drill instructors don't need a whole lot of motivation to be Marine Corps drill instructors.
Right.
They had it a month after 9/11.
Yeah.
And it was, but man, it was such an awe-inspiring evolution to go through those 3 months and to learn the things that I learned that only, all it did was empower me and make my hunger to be of service to my nation stronger.
Yeah.
And so I had a huge hand up on a lot of the recruits in boot camp because of my family history and my family lineage. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it was something that, yeah, I think that's why I was a squad leader, because I mean, a lot of the guys drew from that. I mean, they saw it in me. They knew that, you know, I'm right where I'm supposed to be.
Yeah.
No matter how gnarly it gets, I'm right where I'm supposed to be. And I'm never going to question that fact.
Right.
And, you know, get done with boot camp and, you know, my dad's there, and I'll never forget when my dad, he walked by me on the parade deck and they said, platoon 2018 dismissed. And he didn't even look at me, and he flipped me a can of Copenhagen Long Cut,
mm-hmm.
and he said, "Good job, let's go eat."
Wow.
Didn't even look at me, so I was like, okay, he's still pissed, I get it. And I still didn't understand why.
Yeah.
Well, come to find out, you know, that my dad saw what war and combat does to the human mind and the human soul through his father, mm-hmm. and his older brother. Mm-hmm. And all it was his love and concern for me.
Yeah.
And wanting me to not have to experience the worst part of the human element and the human condition.
Yeah.
You know, and I, of course, this didn't register with me until, you know, until probably I was in the hospital, because we spent a lot of time together in the hospital. But I saw his, you know, frustration more than anything. And, but little did he know, like, that just motivated me more.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and it made me want to do, you know, be a Marine even more.
Yeah.
And then I remember getting done with boot camp and, you know, him saying something at lunch where we went and ate lunch, and he said, "Well, you know, Jake's basically trained Marine." And I remember that pissing me off. I was like, "It's more than you're ever going to be."
Yeah. Wow.
So, I mean, basically trained or not.
Right.
I've got 10 days and I'm going to school of infantry. When I'm done with that, I dare you to say basically one more time.
Wow.
And I remember it just like, I didn't say anything. I don't think I've ever even said that publicly. I think that's the first time I've ever said it. But I remember that really, really getting under my skin.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I just come off this gnarly 3 month evolution, mm-hmm. that I saw guys dropping like flies.
Yeah.
And I'm like, basically trained Marine? Yeah. Like, can you even, I don't even think you could say that.
Right.
But I get his point, and, you know, clearly he's old school. And, so it is what it is, but went up to school of infantry after my 10-day leave. Loved every minute of school of infantry. And, you know, that's where you learn that what you're about to embark on is a very real, high stress, inherently dangerous job.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's where, in school of infantry, is where it really hit me.
Yeah.
Where I was like, okay, this is going to be life altering.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, I think it hit all of us. I mean, we're young Marines. We're going to still have our good times, you mm-hmm. know, get it in. Cause we all knew we were going to war, just didn't know when. And, but it was something we talked about often that was like, hey, you know, this is no joke.
Right.
Like this is the real deal. Yeah. And you get in these training environments and, you know, especially like 3D warfare and house fighting, and it's like, man, there's so many things that can go wrong.
Yeah.
So fast.
Yeah.
And you won't see it coming.
Yeah.
Because there's so many possibilities. And I just remember us sitting down one day and talking about it and just saying, hey, look, you know, all we can do is make sure we have each other's back, make sure that, you know, our six is covered, and you have our left lateral limit, our right lateral limit, make sure, you know, our line of fire is direct. You got to be precise. And, you know, that's what people don't understand, is that the saying goes, every Marine's a rifleman. Well, until you go through a 3D environment and a house-to-house warfare environment,
yeah,
you have to be very, very precise with where you're going to place a round because, like I said, you are one slight trigger pull away from making a mistake that you're probably not going to get over.
Jake, okay, so it's the timeliness of this is amazing because so I'm right now reading McChrystal's book, Team of Teams.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that he talked about that you guys had to deal with was that what he realized was that war had now changed forever. It used to be complicated. War is always complicated, but now it had become complex, meaning that it wasn't linear, that there wasn't a defined battlefield. There wasn't defined nation states going head to head. All the rules had basically been thrown out the window, and you guys were thrust into this, this environment where you can't just create, like go back to football, you can't just map the play and execute it. And yeah, you're not going to score every time. You're not going to get your block every time. But generally speaking, you've got, 100 yards between end zones to run your plays and either score or not, right?
Right, yeah.
Now war is not that. That's not the case anymore. It has gone from a complicated endeavor to an incredibly complex endeavor.
Exactly.
And you guys were the first generation to go in there and be awakened to that, correct?
Correct. And that was one of the things that, talking to the men and women that came before me, it's interesting because I've heard a lot from, World War II era all the way to Vietnam. Like, man, there's no way in hell I would want to be in the environment you guys had to fight in. And when I'm thinking, like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
You guys make us look like a bunch of sissies, like from the environments. Frozen Reservoir. I mean, that's just one. There's so many battles I could think of that were way before my time that it was a no-win condition.
Yeah.
But you're right. It is, especially because you weren't sure who your enemy was or wasn't.
Yeah.
There's not traditional uniforms. There's not all these traditional things from the past have now changed. The game has absolutely shifted. The playing field shifted. And you know what? Good. Mm-hmm. Good. Harder is going to draw better effort.
Mm. I like that.
And we were good with it.
Yeah.
It was, okay, when we show up, it's business time.
Mm-hmm.
And regardless of what was said back here, you don't send, especially groups like mine, the Battle Ambassadors, to go make friends in foreign nations. You just don't do it.
Right.
That's not what we're trained to do. It was not ever in my job description. I never remember reading it one time.
Yeah, yeah.
And so if we're going to pump that out to the public, whatever.
Yeah.
Because my thing is like the public, we went to war, you go back to the mall.
Hmm.
Because we're a spoiled nation and everybody knows it. I'm not afraid to say it. I myself take freedoms for granted every single day.
Yeah.
And it just is what it is.
Yep.
But sometimes we have to get a fresh perspective. And being over there taught me a lot in a very short amount of time. And it taught me that really human life has no value. Mm-hmm. Every human life is invaluable. That's why we help all the people we help here at 22 Kill. It's whether veteran or family members thereof or first responder or law enforcement officer, their family members. Look, everybody deserves to live well.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, I was asked in an interview I had to do last year, for the first time, I was asked if I was angry with my enemy.
Mm.
I'm just calling it, it's our enemy. Mm-hmm. Am I angry with our enemy? And I remember it kind of put me back in my seat because I'd never been asked that.
Yeah.
Out of all the interviews and all the things I've done, I've never been asked that. And so I had to think about it because I wanted to give a straight answer. I'm not going to, and I usually don't sugarcoat much because life's too short.
Yeah.
Quickest way from point A to point B is a straight line.
Yep.
And, with conviction, I could say no. No, I'm not. Why would I be?
Yeah.
If they came here, we would do the same thing. Mm-hmm. I definitely would do the same thing. And so, no, I'm not. It is what it is.
Yeah.
When I volunteered for infantry and signed on the dotted line, I knew damn good and well there is a high probability of me being either hurt or killed.
Yeah.
And I volunteered for that.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody owes me anything.
Yeah.
I am not owed a thing.
Yeah.
And neither is anyone else who raised a right hand and volunteered to serve their nation, wear the cloth of their nation.
Right.
Because we've had millions come before us, and there's going to be millions after us.
Yeah.
And so, you know, all these things said, it's something that I think it is such a great learning experience that, you know, people say, oh, do you think that everybody should serve out of high school? No, I don't think that, because it's not for everybody. It's just not. Like, my own brother will tell you, like, there's no way in hell I would ever even try to do the whole Marine thing.
Mm-hmm.
No way. And that's okay, because I'm here to tell you that to wear a uniform and serve your nation, to be of service to your nation, you have to wear a uniform. That's the biggest misnomer ever. It just is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a million ways to serve your nation. There's a million ways to serve the people in your community. You don't have to wear a uniform to be of service to your nation. Right. That's something that everybody needs to learn and understand, that I'm no better than you and you're no better than me. Mm-hmm. We're both equally fundamentally flawed human beings.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay. But I'm so grateful that I can call on, at any given moment, I have a pretty long list of individuals that I can call that will drop whatever they're doing, wherever they are in the world, to help me.
Well, and let me, so because the listener can't see Jake right now, for those who haven't met you in person, you know, it's one thing to listen to someone say that no, I'm not mad at my enemy, but you still wear the scars. I mean, this isn't someone that went over, you know, gave it a good fight and came back, and now it's all theoretical. I mean, this is coming from a Marine who had who it's going to be a part of your life forever. That enemy's actions, you literally deal with every single second of every day. And the thing about you, Jake, that is really quite remarkable, you see Jake across from, and I'm looking at Ashley right now, you see Jake from across the room and you go, yeah, he looks like a badass Marine, but because the way, the way he carries himself, it's not until you get up close and I look at your left hand.
Mm-hmm.
You're wearing long sleeves, but I can see your hand.
Yeah.
You might notice a slight limp, but other than that, you don't know. You see this Marine before you, but now I want you to talk about what's under that pant leg. Because I think it's important, because what you just said is a great segue.
Yeah.
You're not mad at your enemy, and this is coming from a Marine who, folks, this is that, to hear you say that, man, that's pretty awe inspiring.
Yeah, well, you know, look, yeah, I had a rough day at the office in Iraq, and
to put it mildly.
But that's what it was. You know, I mean, that's what it was. That had a lot of carryover and implications, and, you know. But again, there is no blame to go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
There just isn't. And, you know, I'm grateful for that. And it was, so we were on a REAC mission in a place called Dulab, Iraq. And this was September of 2004. And our primary area of operation for my unit was the Sunni Triangle. It's also was coined the Death Triangle. And I like to say, because Unicorn Triangle or Rainbow Triangle is already taken, so they call it the Death Triangle. But we knew as soon as we got word that that's where we were going, that it was going to go down whether we wanted it to or not. We knew it. And we were good with it. We did our work up at 29 Palms, California, in the glorious Mojave Desert. And I say that with a ton of sarcasm, but we were already a tight-knit unit, but we got much tighter at 29 Palms, and, you know, we did some training at March Air Force Base, actually where we lost the first Marine in a training incident. And, you know, we got over there, and we knew this is real deal, this is game time, we can't, you know, complacency kills, can't get complacent. And, you know, we were hooking and jabbing day one. It was just constant movement, back to back to back to back. Just being tired, hot, and hungry were three absolutes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I learned in a combat environment that it's just like life. The two absolutes of combat, just like life, is plan A is never going to go according to plan A, and communication at some point is going to break down. And so, and that's life. Mm-hmm. And it's just like combat. Mm-hmm. So we get these orders that we're going to Dulab, and I don't know why, I just had a bad feeling about it. And when I left the States, I remember telling my family, hey, I love you guys. You know, I'll miss you. And, you know, thank you all for being who you are to me and the parts that you've played in my life. And, but I'm not going to write you. I don't want you to write me. Don't send me anything. Don't watch the news, and no news is good news. And I have a job to do. I'll see you in 7 months. Mm-hmm. And I just remember a lot of them looking at me like, you know, come on, Jake. But knowing that when I say something like that, I mean it. Mm-hmm. And do it.
Yeah.
Or, you know, or you're probably going to hear how I disapprove of it.
Right.
And because my family puts the Jerry in Springer, so I didn't need any of the worldly crap back here affecting my job over there. But I remember we got these orders, and I don't know why, I had this bad feeling about it. I remember I was in the shower. I went to the shower trailer that night, and I went back, and I was walking into our tent, and my gunny was standing in front of the hatch or the doorway of the tent. Mm-hmm. And I gave him the proper greeting of the day, you know, good evening, gunny. And he didn't say anything, and I walked by him, and I was in my my little PT shorts, little Mel Daisy Dukes, and this olive drab skivvy shirt. And I remember he grabbed the back of my skivvy shirt with his left hand and pulled me back in front of him. And he hugged me. And he said, you're going to be okay, Schick. Hmm. I love you. And I was like, first of all, I didn't know, like, am I supposed to hug him back? I'm standing here, like, I don't know what to do with my hands. And is this a setup? Like, right. Are we about to have a Marine Corps martial arts lesson? And but I hugged him back. I said, love you too, Guns. And then, of course, he told me politely to go away. And but something told me, I just felt this feeling that go call your family. Mm. Go call people that mean something to you. And I broke my own rule. I went to the call center and called my family, called my father last. And I know it was around 10:30 at night in Louisiana. And I remember calling my dad and my dad answering. And as soon as he answered, and I said, hey, Pop. And you know it's me because I'm the only kid that calls him Pop. Mm-hmm. I said, hey, Pop. And the first thing he said to me was, why am I talking to you? Hmm. It's almost like he knew that I knew something wasn't right.
Yeah.
And I said, well, Dad, I just wanted to call and tell you how much I love you and that I need to thank you for helping make me being the biggest contributing factor to me being the man that I am. Wow. And that's because of you.
Wow.
And I just need you to know that. How much I love you, respect you, and appreciate you. And he just told me, you better be okay. And I was like, I'm going to be fine, Dad. And he said, he knew not to ask me where I'm going or what mm-hmm. we've been doing or anything. And he said, when can I talk to you again? I said, 9 days. He said, I better hear from you 9 days, and you better be okay. And I said, yes, sir. All right, I love you, Pop. And he said, I love you too. And went back to the tent. And we'd already had the convoy set up and, you know, rifles, ammo, chow, water. We moved out to Dulab. And, you know, we had an incident the night before. It was already September 20th, but early, early in the morning. We had a standoff with Iraqi National Guard. And it was just a long, very high-stress situation to be in because I thought that I was going to be that was going to make me a liar to 10 families. I mean, 9 families, because I was in charge of 9 Marines with the REAC team. And, but we got out of it because I'm talking to you. But, I'm back at the command post. Doc Daniels is actually counting flares along the Euphrates because they would shoot different color flares and, you know, we would mark what time they shot up, what color they were, turn them into intelligence. They mm-hmm. try to crack the code. And I told Doc, hey, I got to bed down. I'm smoked. And he's like, yeah, shit, go get some sleep, brother. And I said, Roger, I walk in the tent, take my boots off, lay on my cot, and not even 15 minutes later, REACT got called. So REACT is QRF, Quick Reaction Force, okay, and the REACT team. And so I had to wake the Marines up, and you know, we do it in our own special way. We whisper sweet nothings in their ear, rub their back.
I'm sure.
That's how we do it.
I hope the listener is picking up on the humor of Jake shit, because it's awesome. It's one of my favorite parts, because it's so funny, because I just gave a speech. I hate to digress, because you're on point, man. But I just gave a speech at SFA this week about talking to a bunch of students at the workplace, and this girl asked me, she said, well, how do you manage professionalism and humor? And I said, well, the first thing, avoid sarcasm, which I love, but you know, everybody gets so sticky about it. And so I'm just having a blast here with the sarcastic remarks. And so anyway, I hope, listener, you're picking up on it, because it's so awesome. But anyway, Jake.
See that? Well, and my thing is with an audience or with really anyone, any meeting environment, serious or not, like the more uncomfortable I can make you,
yeah,
the better.
Yeah, yeah.
I love it. Because I have the advantage. I have the upper hand. And odds are you're going to agree with me, or the conversation is going to go where I want it to go.
Right.
And so basically it's a brain ninja move.
Love it.
And, but it's, I remember walking, I put the boots on, wake the guys up. And when I walk out of the tent, I remember that bad feeling I had in my gut went right in my throat. Mm. And I knew we were about to get hit. Mm. I didn't know by what, I didn't know how bad it was going to be. I didn't know any of those things, but I knew it was about to happen.
Yeah.
And you can call that my grandfather talking to me from beyond the grave. You can call that God. You can call it whatever you want to call it. Because, mm-hmm, you know, good news is you can have your beliefs, I can have mine, and we're probably going to keep our heads attached to our shoulders.
Yeah.
You know, so oorah freedom.
Yeah.
And I remember something telling me to get the bomb blanket out of my commanding officer's Humvee, because he was the only one that had one. This is, again, we're the bastard children of the military. And he didn't need it. He was sleeping. I grabbed this bomb blanket, and I went to the lead vehicle, because we had two-door soft-top Humvees. That's what we operated in, and this is 04. This, mm-hmm, is, I'm sure the listeners will remember there was a big uproar,
yep,
about,
yep,
not enough armor. They need more armor, because,
yep,
IEDs weren't even a thing. We still called them roadside bombs then.
Yeah.
We didn't know that this was going to become the weapon of choice of our enemy, and a very effective weapon at that.
Right.
And so I remember I walked up to the lead vehicle, and I kicked the driver out of the driver's seat. To this day, one of my best friends, and it was the first order I'd ever given him, and I outranked him by not much. Mm-hmm. And I remember looking at me like, "No, I got it, brother." And I'm like, I looked at him. You know, I probably knife hand him and said, "I'm not asking."
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, he got all huffy about that, because he knew he had to listen, and clearly had no idea what feeling I had.
Mm-hmm.
And so I put the bomb blanket down. I get the radio from the radio man, get on the radio with my right hand, tell all the guys to button up, meaning if they gave it to you for protection, put it on. You know, your neck guard, flak jacket's in place, sappy plates are in place, groin protector. If they gave it to you for protection, put it on right now.
Yeah.
It's shatterproof lenses, you know, which are not shatterproof. And I jump in the driver's seat. I don't remember punching it. Less than 3 minutes later, we came over this envelade, or in layman verbiage, a hill, and it was right before we go up through this this dried up creek bed, and it was the only spot in this entire area that the sand wasn't compacted so much that it's just like concrete. Mm-hmm. And I remember driving into it, and I knew this is it.
Wow.
And the front left tire hit a pressure plate ignited triple stack tank mine. And it's that's 3-1, for those listening to understand ordnance, it's 3155 mic or millimeter mortar round stacked. For those that don't understand unexploded ordnance, it just means it's a big bomb.
Yeah.
And as soon as the front left tire hits that plate goes down, lights a fuse, bomb goes off. It blew up directly beneath me, blew me 30 feet to the top of the Humvee. I stuck the landing with my head, because I'm a Marine and we believe in good form. And because God's a comedian, I like to say, I never lost consciousness and I never went into shock.
Wow.
I remember the whole thing. I mean, I remember being in the air thinking to myself, this is really bad.
Wow.
This is really, really bad. is I knew it was a significant explosion, but I didn't know until I started my self-assessment just how big of an explosion it was. And so I hit the deck, can't breathe, can't see out of my left eye because my shatterproof lens is shattered. And I just still can't believe I hadn't been sued for that. But it was one of those things where I knew I was dying. And I knew I was severely wounded before I ever even took a look at my body and started my self-assessment. I knew this is bad.
Yeah.
And I looked down at my left leg first. And this is after I tried to pull myself back to the Humvee because the passenger who I just kicked out of the driver's seat was yelling my name.
Yeah.
Yelling my name, like blood curdling, screaming my name because he couldn't see me. Because of the smoke and the sand over there is really fine. It's like baby powder. Mm-hmm. So if there is an explosion, it takes forever for it to settle. And he was yelling my name because all he could feel was my rounds from my magazine, because my magazines that were on the front of my flak jacket, when the explosion went off, a whole series of events happened before I was ejected from the Humvee. So when the steering wheel disengaged and hit me in my chest, it made all my magazines explode. And so all he felt was rounds and my blood. Wow. And when he noticed that, he thought what we refer to as I was a red mist in the wind. Mm. And he was yelling for me, and so I'm trying to pull myself back to the Humvee with my right arm. It's the only thing that worked. It's the only thing I could move. And I'm trying to pull myself back, and I was just scooping sand. And I remember, I'll never forget when he yelled, he broke all military protocol, and he yelled my first name. And I, to this day, it's just gut-wrenching because I remember, like it happened 10 minutes ago. And I just remember that really, really hurting. Hmm. Like, my body hurt like hell, but that hurt my soul.
Yeah.
Because I just wanted to let him know, like, hey, brother, I'm good, first of all. Secondly, I need you to stop yelling and making us a target. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I'm going to need you to calm the hell down.
Right.
But I couldn't get to him, you know, although I tried. And the guys, that's when I started my self-assessment. I looked down at my left leg. It was wrapped around itself. My fibia, tibia were both exposed. And compound fractures. My left boot was blown off, which shocked me. I mean, because the combat boot to be laced up all the way tight, for it to be blown off, yeah, takes a significant amount of force.
Yeah.
That's when I knew, okay, that was a big explosion.
Yeah.
That was a lot of ordnance. And so I went and looked at my left arm. Part of my left hand was hanging down by my left elbow, mainly my pinky, which I pulled off because I knew, like, we're not going to save that. Saw daylight through my left arm because I had a big piece of shrapnel go. Because I remember I was driving with my left arm. I was on the radio with my right arm.
Yeah.
And I had a big piece of shrapnel go through the bottom of my arm, came out the top, took out 5 inches of my ulna bone, and all my ribs were broken. Which, out of all the injuries, that one sucked the most.
Really?
All the ribs, not just one rib, all the ribs. And it was, I think that's one of the reasons I probably didn't take a breath for as long as I did.
Yeah.
And my right foot hurt, but looked normal. So I was like, okay, it's clearly broken, but looked intact. And so the guys finally get to me, and, you know, they say, oh, we got you, Schick, we got you. And that's when I took my first breath. The first thing I said was develop 360, or, you know, the security cordon, set it up. I mean, and that's, I remember saying it, and I remember them being like, oh yeah. It's like, yeah, we're still at war. Set up some security perimeter, yeah, right now, because I really don't feel like getting shot right now.
Yeah.
And so they set it up. Some of the guys took me to the second vehicle, which is still operational, took me back up to command post, and Doc was right there waiting on me, ready to go, started working on me right away. I remember Hayes was helping him, and man, it was one of those times where it was pure chaos, and I knew this was really, really bad, and I really hated the guys to see me this way, but I'm so thankful for this time because I got to tell every one of them, one after one, got in the driver's seat of the second vehicle, and I got to hold one of their hands with my right hand, and I got to tell every one of them how much I love them and how much they mean to me, and that I'm so honored that they're my family. Wow. And that, you know, they have to fight for me now because I'm done, and that they, this is what, and I told them all, take a good look at me. Take a good look at me, because this is what they want. This, they want to do this to all of us. Wow. Use this as motivation to go fight on, fight forward, and go win.
Yeah.
And so I'm really thankful for that, because it's something that we don't really, you know, with the Marine bravado, and it's not something you do. You don't talk about feelings and all that stuff. Sure. But all that went out of the window when things got very real very quick.
Yeah.
And so, you know, at this point, I'm telling Doc, you know, hit me again with the, meaning morphine, these morphine sticks. And he, I was really upset because he wouldn't. He'd only hit me with two sticks, and I knew he had more. And so I was really irritated about that.
Yeah.
But I didn't know that it could kill me if he hit me with more. And I didn't care at the time. And so, but it took 42 minutes for the Black Hawk to come get me. Mm-hmm. So this was a pretty, this felt like light years long.
I can't even imagine.
And Bird finally gets there. They put me on the Bird. And I remember my platoon sergeant kissing me on my forehead. He was the last one on the Bird and kissed me on my forehead. And he was, I could tell he was trying not to cry. And he looked at me right in my face and he said, "We'll see you soon, Jack London." Because my grandfather's Jack London Schick, my uncle's Jack London Schick Jr. And so clearly Jake's not a cool name, so he always called me Jack London. And I knew he was lying. I knew he just lied to me. Mm. And I'm grateful for it, because it motivated me again.
Yeah.
To say, you know what? All right, I'm gonna prove you wrong. The Bird takes off, they take me to Balad, where it's Field Hospital right outside Baghdad. And I remember the surgeon sewing up my face and he said, "Oops." And I looked at him and I said, "What do you mean, oops?" "It's sorry, Marine, messed up on your stitches. We're going to start again." At this point, I had a sheet on my body up to my neck. And I remember looking at him and saying, "You know, Doc, I don't know if you've seen me from the neck down, but fairly certain the scratches on my face are the least of our worries."
Right.
And he gave this little nod to the anesthetist, mm-hmm. the person that put you to sleep. And that's the last thing I remember.
Yeah.
Till they woke me up. And that's when Nurse Jax woke me up and said, "Hey, Marine, sorry, we had to take your right foot." To which I was like, okay, went back to my self-assessment. Remember my right foot looking fine, but hurting, my left leg being wrapped around itself, my left boot being blown off my left foot. And I'm like, okay, well, long day just got longer, took the wrong foot.
Oh, God.
Good enough for government work, you know, 50-50 shot. But then she explained to me my right foot was dead by the time I got there. There was, when I got hit, the firewall folded up on my right foot, which crushed my right foot, which impeded the blood flow. And so my right foot was already dead. There was no saving it. There was no way they could have saved it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that was the beginning of a very long, arduous journey that took a lot of time, effort, energy, motivation, inspiration, conviction to overcome. That's when my own personal war really started.
And before you go down the road of that personal war, I want to read to you a Jake Schick quote that stuck with me.
Okay.
"Physical pain reminds you that you are alive, but mental pain will
test your will to stay that way."
I mean,
fact.
That right there, brother, to me is just between the eyes, just clear as a bell. Talk about that.
Yeah, look, if I'm in shorts and a t-shirt, it's abundantly apparent that I had a rough day at work somewhere along the line.
Yeah.
But if I'm wearing what I'm wearing today, you know, unless you're attention to detail oriented, yeah. you know, it's probably hard to tell.
Yep.
Aside from, you know, some of the scars on my face, like that. Look, the most detrimental wounds a person can have, whether a combatant or not, live in between your ears. Mm. It's the most detrimental to your well-being. You know, and you referred to earlier is, you know, you have these injuries that, you know, now I have a prosthetic leg on my right leg because I'm a below-the-knee amputee. But you said I have this constant reminder every day and of the things that my enemy did. But I look at it differently. Every time I take my leg off or put it on, you know, I'm just reminded that I'm still winning. And so, I mean, I just look at it differently.
I love that.
Because it's like, I won.
Right.
I'm still breathing.
Which, again, starts between the ears.
Right. Yeah. And the thing is when I started this recovery and I saw my family when I got back to the States and, you know, spent 18 months in the hospital, you know, I had over 50 operations, over 20 blood transfusions.
Right.
It was when they said, you know, you've been diagnosed post-traumatic stress disorder and you have a traumatic brain injury. Those were the things that I was like, okay.
Yeah.
Those are the things that I didn't want to hear.
Yeah.
And because you can't avoid them.
Yeah.
But I've come to learn, look, post-traumatic stress is nothing more than a completely normal reaction to an otherwise abnormal situation. It's completely normal. That doesn't mean there's something wrong with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, it means that you're reacting the way that you were made to react.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah.
And it's okay to not be okay. Everybody who's listening understands that.
Absolutely.
Everybody who's listening understands what it feels like to struggle with depression or anxiety or hypervigilance or suicidal ideation, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Every single person that's listening. I don't have to ask. I don't have to know them because I've read a lot of studies and I know a lot of people. And it is a very, very common human characteristic to struggle mentally and emotionally.
Yeah.
It's okay. It is normal. It's normal. And that's why we have to get past the whole, you know, well, you know, men don't cry or the whole, you know, keep your emotions to yourself, showing weakness, whatever. Mm-hmm. Asking for help is the gladiator thing to do.
Yeah.
That's the strong thing to do. When I'm talking to people, you know, it doesn't matter from what walk of life. If I see a group that says, if I'm talking to a group and I'll ask them, you know, who here is tougher, more badass than a Spartan? Just show of hands. By that point, they know if you raise your hand, I'm probably going to verbally unzip you.
Right.
But they also know no one there is tougher than a Spartan.
Right.
I mean, they're Spartans.
Yep.
So explain to me. So then I'll say, what has changed from the time of Spartans when they would go through a major battle? And that ever after every major battle, it was mandatory that they would mourn their loss, their losses for an hour, mandatory. That they would hug and cry and mourn their losses. What has changed from that time to modern era, modern day, where we can't show emotion? We can't admit that we're hurting.
Yeah.
We can't talk about it. What's changed? I mean, clearly a myriad of things, but it's for me, it's like, look, we all bleed red.
Yeah.
Every one of us. We all are, again, fundamentally flawed. It's okay. That's what we tell the people we help here at 22 Kill. Look, it's okay to not be okay.
Yeah.
That's normal.
Yeah.
And the fact that you walk through these doors shows a tremendous amount of courage. Congratulations. Yeah. First step is done.
Yeah.
It's not going to be, you know, fair winds and following seas from this point forward.
All right.
You're going to have to be willing to get uncomfortable in order to grow.
Mm-hmm.
Refuse to be a hostage to your pride. Refuse to be a hostage to your pride. And embrace your vulnerability. That's where you're going to find victory.
Yeah.
And that's what we're telling these men and women is that, look, it's okay.
Right.
That's why we say tribe here.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's the 22 Kill tribe.
Yeah.
Because team is too easy.
Yeah.
If you have a shirt that has lettering on the left breast pocket and I have the same shirt,
yeah,
by default, we're a team. Too easy.
Yeah.
Tribes are driven by the same conviction, passion, ideology, motivations. Tribes win championships.
Yeah.
Teams just play.
I like it.
And that's why we're a tribe. And our thing is that if you're going to go through what you've gone through, if you're going to struggle, like with me, like I said, from trials and tribulation, controversy comes character. Which way you take that character is up to you.
Yeah.
I suck at doing anything halfway, good or bad. I like to say that either way, it's going to be a hell of a show. And I went all the way with drugs. I went all the way with alcohol.
Yeah.
I had a very destructive life for a long time. Doesn't mean you can't change.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that you have to stay in your cesspool of comfortability.
Yeah.
Because that's what it is. It's ultimately, if you're caught in that trap, it's ultimately your fear of not knowing what it would be like if you do take the steps to empower yourself and be better.
Yeah.
It's the fear of the unknown that's keeping you where you are.
Yeah, I love that. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Take the leap.
Yeah.
Take the leap because you have one life to live. This isn't a dress rehearsal.
Yeah.
You get one shot.
I love it, man. All right. I think Ashley's getting antsy. Are we good? We got a little bit of time?
We got a little more time.
I
got
to make sure the boss stays, you know, that she doesn't get on to either one of us.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's going to happen no matter what.
So I want you to take this time. You manage it the best way possible because I would like to touch a little bit on the struggle you had that led you to understanding this. I mean, yes, I think any listener with half a brain realizes that you went through an unbelievably traumatic experience.
Of course.
But then you went down a rather dark road. You faced some of the demons that come as a result of it. But like we talked about earlier, you were able to conquer them. And what you were just talking about, you were able to realize some things that a lot of people, by God's grace, some veterans are listening to this right now, and you just gave them permission to ask for help. You just gave them permission. Not that they needed permission from you, but they need to hear from somebody that it's okay to have those feelings. Now go do something with them in a positive way to get better. So take that, Jake, and talk about as much of your journey through that process. And then I want to make sure that we use this time to let people understand what 22 Kill is, to understand the profound impact that war, battle, whatever, that the people, and one of the things I love about 22 Kill, it's not just about veterans anymore, but it's first responders that go through these things that, like you said, it's a normal reaction to being blown up. That is not a normal event.
Right.
So take that where you want to make sure that this time is best used for your story, which I think is so compelling to what 22 Kill story is.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, listen, at the height of my drug addiction, I really battled suicidal ideation. And I had a plan. I had a plan to check out, call it quits, because I felt like I was a burden to my family, I was a burden to my friends. It was, everyone would be better off if I was just gone.
And right there, I think that's profound, because it wasn't about that I could never go back. I couldn't play, you know, pick up football anymore. It wasn't that I may look different. It was that's not, I didn't hear that one time. It wasn't about how your abilities had changed. It was about what your injuries, how it impacted those around you, which I would imagine is a pretty common theme amongst.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. That's why we treat the family unit here. You have to treat the entire family. Mm. And that's because you're all in it together. You all go through significant experiences and trauma together, not just the individual at all. It's the entire family unit. Yeah. And so, you know, for me, I just felt like, all right, I've done enough damage. I need to, because I was never a good patient. I was not hard. No, I was not easy to deal with for quite some time. And because I was in survival mode, you know, and all I knew to do when my back was in a corner was to fight my way out.
Yeah.
That's all I knew my entire life. And I was in survival mode. But I was, you know, I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. And I got a phone call that changed all that. And it was from a guy that I fought with in Iraq and his dad. And he said, you know, hey, we lost Will last night. And it was by his own hand. Mm. That really would change the course of my life. Yeah. And, you know, to date, I've lost 30 friends who've died by suicide. You know, I know 8 that were killed in combat. And it's a staggering statistic, but it's a very real statistic. And what people need to understand is that post-traumatic stress, traumatic brain injury, trauma is not a warrior issue. Mm-hmm. It's not a first responder issue. It's not a law enforcement issue. It is a human issue. Mm-hmm. It is a human issue. And that's the thing that we have to understand, is that we all need this help and this empowerment. And we all have to understand that we're all going to fall short at some point. We're all going to struggle. We're all going to do all these things. You know, struggling is inevitable.
Yeah.
Suffering is optional.
Yeah.
And we have to remember that every day we wake up, it's our choice. You're a victim or a victor. It's your choice. every day you wake up. There is no gray area there.
Yeah.
You either choose to be winning or not.
Love it. Yep.
Period. Doesn't mean you're not going to have hard days.
Yeah.
Those are guaranteed.
Yeah.
But it's how you continue to move forward through that trial, through those trials and tribulations, that's going to, that's what people remember.
Absolutely.
And it's like I tell my kids, just focus on living a life worth writing about.
Hmm. I like that.
And it's, you know, I have a sign above their toilet, and all it says is I make them read it when they go in, when they go out of the bathroom. Stay humble, be kind, work hard.
Hmm.
It's all you have to remember. Stay humble, be kind, work hard. That's why here, it's like I tell the tribe, look, if anyone who walks in these doors, treat them as if they have a broken heart, because you never know.
Hmm.
You never know. And one thing that people can feel here is that we're going to love you all the way, unconditionally, knowing there's we're going to get hurt. It's going to happen. It's happened before. It's going to happen again.
Right.
You know, we know we're never going to bat 1,000. Two reasons. There's God. We're not him.
Right.
You know, we have to have realistic expectations in order to be completely effective at this job.
Yeah.
And, but we also know that if we lean in, rely on one another, and love all the way, anything is possible. Anything is possible. And that's why I truly believe in my short 37 years on the spinning ball of chaos, I truly, truly believe that every human being, regardless of what corner of the world they come from, socioeconomic status, relationships with family, friends, I think none of that matters. I believe that we are all born with two objectives from the time we're born to the time we die, and that's love and be loved, period.
Hmm.
I think those... If people are wondering, like, oh, yeah, I just don't know what my purpose is, because that a lot of service personnel, rather military, first responder, law enforcement officer, when they can't do that job anymore, they struggle with, like, oh, I just don't know what my purpose is.
Yeah.
Everyone has the same two, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Love and be loved.
Yeah.
Everything in between is filler.
Right.
Everything. You know, people say, well, Jake, you know, why does life get so hard? Human element, free will, gets hard because we make it hard.
Yeah.
We are masters of making what should be an otherwise joyful, happy, enjoyable life extremely hard and depressing, and you know, we cling to struggle.
Amen.
And it's like, why?
Yeah.
Why are you choosing to do that?
Yeah.
Let's just grind with grace and understand that we're all imperfect. We're all imperfect bipod mortals that are all gonna die.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so it's, don't allow, this is what I tell audiences that I talk to all over the world, do not have to placate the societal expectation in order to achieve greatness.
I love it.
You just don't.
Love it.
Because when you die, there's going to be a group of people at your funeral that love you, and a group that probably didn't care much for you, and you have zero control over either group.
Amen.
You have control over the person looking back at you in the mirror, and that's where it stops.
Mm.
And if you want to live an effective life and truly be an impact to those around you, because that's really what it's all about. What can you do to make those around you better?
Love it.
You have to love yourself all the way.
Which is so hard.
But that's because you have to, it's, and the reason it's so hard is because you have to start with self-forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to start with giving yourself grace. And that's extremely difficult because a lot of people do not want to exercise the demons that reside in their soul in order to evict them because they're afraid of what they're going to find.
Yeah.
Well, look, just because they're lying dormant does not mean they're gone.
That's right.
You can't avoid it forever.
That's right.
Then at some point, it's going to catch up to you.
Yeah.
Start doing the work now.
Amen.
Start doing the work now in order to live your best life, because you got to live well. Here's why I came to that conclusion, the whole live well thing. That is the only way we can properly, in the most authentic, genuine manner, honor the men and women that have come before us and those that are going to come after us, is by living well. Mm. There's no other way. I don't want a plaque. I don't want a trophy. Those are all things that collect dust, and I have plenty of them.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to live well. It is truly the only fear that I really do harness, mm, is that, not living well. That's all I want to do, and whatever that takes. And I still have my bad days. I still get depressed. I still struggle with a lot of things because I am human.
Yeah.
It's okay. I'm okay to say, you know what? I'm a drug addict and alcoholic. Yeah. You know, it's okay for me to say, like, yeah, I've been divorced. I understand what it's like to have a marriage that doesn't go the distance. I understand all these things. And look, it's okay.
Yeah.
And because I find solace in the fact that anyone who passes judgment on me doesn't have their own crap together.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, facts are facts.
Absolutely.
And I just want my kids, when they stand over my grave, I want them to look at each other and go, wow, we have a lot of work to do. Because I want to set the bar so high that I want it to be intimidating for them.
I love that. And it's cool too, because one of the questions I nearly always ask a guest as we get close to the end is about in 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, where you end up at your own funeral and you stop, you close the book, you go, what do you want people to say? And I'm sorry to all the other Texas Titans, that may be the coolest thing that's ever said, is that you want people to say, I got work to do. That's unbelievable. Yeah. I love that, man.
And not to be crass, but I mean, I don't care what anyone else says. Yeah. I just care what those two boys say.
I love it.
Yeah. I mean, that's because I will unapologetically admit that they're two very, very well ahead of anyone or thing else driving factors of why I do what I do every single day.
You know, that's something we definitely have in common, because whenever I did that exercise for myself when I read the book, it was a little different. It was, I want, you know, the only thing I care about people saying is he was a good father. You know, he was what Rylan and Abby, and again, it's what I want to hear from them, everybody mm-hmm. else, and from Jemlyn, my wife, yeah. You know, that he was a good dad and he loved well. And so, I love that, man.
Yeah, and that's really for me, because that's people say, well, my kids are my legacy. No, they're not. Don't you dare take away from their life with your selfishness.
Mm.
No, they're not. No, they're not. You do you, let them do them. You set the example.
There's a lot of parents that need to hear that, right?
Yeah, and my thing is, put yourself in check.
Yeah.
It's okay, because, you know, when I picked my oldest up from baseball practice last year, or the year before, and he said, Dad, I really got to talk to you, I got to tell you something. And, you know, I was like, oh, okay. And he was 7 at the time, or 6, and I pull over on the side of the road, because I'm like, we're about to have this profound moment.
Yeah, yeah.
And I look back in the back seat, I'm like, yeah, what is it, Bubba? And he said, and just 100% transparency. Like my oldest son knew the Marine Corps hymn before he knew his ABCs. There may or may not have been some indoctrination happening there. But he said, Dad, I've been thinking about this a long time. It's really hard for me to tell you this, but I don't want to be a United States Marine. I want to be a professional baseball player. And I looked at him and I said, Bubba, awesome.
Yeah.
I don't care if you want to be a professional flautist, but you're going to be the best in the world.
Yeah.
You live your life for you, not for me, not for your mom. This is your life. It's our job to give you the opportunity and to be the best at whatever you are.
Amen.
But you live for you. We're going to love you unconditionally no matter what.
Yeah.
That will never change.
Yeah.
No matter what. And you only get this one shot. You need to do what you want to do for you. You need to find what feeds your soul and do that.
Yeah.
Not for me or your mom. It doesn't, those things don't matter.
Yeah. I love it.
And that's what I want people to understand, is like, just do you. Yeah. Everybody else is taken.
Yeah. There you go.
Wake up and do you.
Great advice.
You know, that's why at 22 Kill, we have the gas mask and the logo.
Yeah.
Well, what that mask represents is that most people wake up, put on a mask, go to the office, change yep. their mask, go yep. to a lunch meeting, different mask, go home, another mask.
Mm-hmm.
Throw that damn thing away, wake up and do you.
Yeah.
Unapologetically.
Yeah. I love it. I heard Beth Moore said one time, you know, most people, they show up to church, and that, for that matter, like you said, anywhere, in the Witness Protection Program. Yeah, that's what they do. They're trying to be something they're not. They're going through life in the Witness Protection Program, and it's one of the things, you know, like I told you when I spoke to these students, that you just touched on with regard to the demons and dealing with yourself, is that
it's a scary thing to truly evaluate who you really are and then pull out the cancers and deal with them. You got to either say, okay, yeah, I see there's a black spot there, but man, if I ignore it, it will go away. No, it will not. It will grow and it will spread. You have to, when you're performing your triage, you got to do something.
And here's why I believe I know why that is. It is so much easier to be sad, depressed, angry, miserable, struggling than it is to be inherently happy.
Yeah.
Feeling joy the way it was intended. You know, exhilarated just to be alive.
Yeah.
Here's why. The latter doesn't take a lot of effort.
Exactly right.
To feel joy and to feel the way it was intended and to feel happiness, true happiness, those things take work.
Yep. Yep.
Period.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, again, like, make a choice when you wake up to not be lazy and understand that you're worth living well.
Yeah.
Do the work.
Absolutely.
No one's going to do it for you.
Nope. You can't just read a book about push-ups. You got to actually get up there.
Right.
Right. Or if you're a Marine, you got to do those pull-ups. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And I mean, right. It's just, here's the thing is if you're not willing to put in the work, don't expect to reap any of the awards.
Yeah. Amen.
Because it's just, it's like praying for a miracle and refusing to get out of your isolation chamber.
Yeah, yeah, right.
What are you doing?
Yeah.
Be proactive in your own self-growth. Be proactive in your own life that's going to be lived well and in abundance, and it's going to set an example for generations to come. No one is going to do the work for you. And that's what people say all the time, like, oh, Jake, you know, the guys you guys do at 22 Killing, you're saving lives. No, we're not. No, we're not. Here's why. We are giving them the tools to help them help themselves.
Yeah.
They're saving their lives.
Yeah.
We're not doing it. We're not doing the work for them.
Yeah.
We're just helping them do the work, showing them, giving them the tools and empowering them to do the work. That's it. Whether that's a therapy program or riding a motorcycle or going on a camping excursion or a hunting excursion, it's all the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here's the tools. You do the work. Understand it's going to be uncomfortable. By the way, that's normal. That's by design. That's for every human on the spin and ball of chaos. Yeah. It's supposed to be uncomfortable. It's supposed to be awkward.
Yeah.
That's the point. No one grows in their comfort zone.
Right, right.
Stop being afraid of what you might be if you put the bottle down or if you put the pills down or if you don't allow your fear to dictate who you can be.
I love it.
Fear of the unknown is going to get you nowhere.
Yeah.
And oh, by the way, it's something that's going to always be there.
Yeah.
So learn to channel it and use it. Burn that fear as fuel and move on.
Wow. I love it. All right, Jake, I can't let you go without telling these people how they can support 22 Kill. What's the best way to get involved with you guys? And if there's a vet listening, if right now or a first responder, whomever that could use you. Just how does this audience support what you're doing or benefit from what 22 Kill's doing?
Yeah, you go, it's simple. Number22kill.com. Go to the website. You can email us. We'll get back to you right away. info@22kill.com or support@22kill.com. We will get back to you within 24 hours. And we have a myriad of programs that can, that are going to help empower you, your families, and, listen, it's just if you're one of those people that's listening and you're struggling and you don't understand your purpose, just remember what I said. Love and be loved, but it starts with the person in the mirror.
Amen.
When I have people show up here and if they end up in my office, then it's probably a really hard case. And they say, you know, Jake, I just don't understand why my wife or my husband or my son or my daughter or whatever won't love me the way I love them. And I look at them and I say, are you in love with the person that looking back at you in the mirror?
Mm-hmm.
And usually, more often than not, by your hesitation, I know the answer.
Yeah.
And I just want you to know that you expecting someone else to do for you what you can't do for yourself is the height of hypocrisy.
Wow. Wow.
So let's talk about let's talk about ownership.
Well said.
And accountability.
I love it.
And so my thing is get comfortable being uncomfortable and grow.
Awesome.
Find victory in your vulnerability and refuse to be a hostage to your pride. Because, again, you only get one shot.
Very, very
profound words of wisdom. And Jake, I just got to tell you, on behalf of this audience, on behalf of my wife and my children, thank you for your service, but also not only thank you for your combat service, but thank you for arming up people right now, continuing. You know, at Red River Army Depot in Texarkana, where you and I first got to meet in person, that's what the depot does. They arm up. You know, they take Humvees and they arm them up. And we were talking earlier about how, you know, there was a big controversy because they didn't have enough armed up Humvees and that sort of thing. And what you're doing is at 22 Kill, you're helping to arm up those individuals who are fighting the battle that is closest to home, which is the one that resides between their ears. And brother, thank you for that. Thank you for using your life and your service to help continue helping others to be equipped to fight that battle on behalf of every, you know, freedom-loving, liberty-loving, patriotic American. Thank you for protecting and defending mine and my family's freedom, brother, and for what you're doing beyond that. Thank you so much.
You, your family, everybody listening, you know, same, you're worth it, period. I mean, this, you're worth it. That's and I mean it, you know. So if I didn't believe it, I wouldn't say it.
Thank you, brother. Thanks for being on the Texas Titan Podcast. Ashley, who's been sitting here silently, thank you for giving us a little more time. Y'all travel safely, and appreciate you, brother.
Appreciate you, brother.
All right. Hey, folks, thanks for listening. Before you go, I would like to ask a favor. Please go out to Amazon.com and pick up a copy of my book, Push Play, Taking Your Life Off Pause. You can either order a paperback or you can actually download it to your Kindle. And I wanted to share with you a little bit of a reading from one of the chapters on Why Not You? And this is where I describe one of my biggest insecurities that maybe you have as well. You know, it's so often that we look out and we see things that are happening in the world. We see people crushing it and doing things that we would love to do. And because they're doing it, we go, yeah, why should I even try? There's already enough of those out there. That's already covered. But in fact, that's not the case. And whenever I told one of my buddies I really, really wanted to pursue my writing and speaking, he was incredibly encouraging, and he told me to go check out John Acuff. And if any of you have not checked out any of John Acuff's work, I highly recommend it. He is an incredible author. He is an incredible speaker, and I love pretty much everything that John puts out. One of my favorite books of his is called Finish. If you're looking to figure out how to just finish projects and get things done, it's a great book. But anyway, so I start researching John Acuff. And instead of being encouraged, which is exactly what my friend was trying to do, I was like, oh man, this guy's doing exactly what I want to do. And I mean, he's already got a lot of success. And he's so far ahead of me. And I just immediately, I sunk into doubt and just insecurity, thinking, wow, well, the world already has John Acuff. They don't need Jason Wright. But here is here's the reality. And here's what I wrote in the book. My friend was very encouraging and told me I needed to look at some of John's work. I did, and immediately my mind associated doubt with the existence of John Acuff. I watched John speak, looked at his books, and thought, oh crap, there's already a me out there. The world doesn't need me. It has John Acuff. I gave a man who is terribly talented and pretty much living my dream credit for having cornered the entire market of speaking and writing, as though there was no room for anyone else. I immediately realized what I was doing and knew I had to find a way to train my brain to respond differently. Instead of getting down and thinking I could never achieve what John has, I started saying to myself, I have enormous faith that the world needs me to speak when John Acuff isn't available. I trained myself to look at John as confirmation of the need for my work instead of thinking there was no work left for another speaker like me to do. Folks, how many times do you do that? Whatever it is that you want to pursue, whatever it is that you may want to do that seems crazy, that may seem like you're going to tell your friends that you're joining the circus, and that thing, there's so many other people doing it that you go, well, gosh, they would never need me. Well, guess what? They're going to take a day off. They're going to be occupied somewhere else. And when they are, that's when you step in. There is an abundant space for people to pursue their dreams and ambitions and crush it. So with that, please pick up a copy of my book. I'd be grateful. And if you do, please leave a review at Amazon.com. I'd be so grateful. Thanks for listening, folks. Hey, folks, I hope you enjoy this episode of the Texas Titans podcast. Before you go, I wanted to let you know where you can find us out there on the interwebs. You can go to show notes as well as listen to all the past episodes and look for upcoming shows at texttitans.blog. Also, that has all the different formats that you can listen to the show on if you go there. So texttitans.blog. You can also go to jasonrightnow.com. That has not only a link to the podcast, but it also has a link to my Make Your Own Rules blog that I think you'll enjoy. So please check that out. Also, it has information about my executive coaching business, speaking, and anything else like that. So jasonrightnow.com. That's literally just my name, jasonrightnow.com. On Twitter, I'm at jasonwrighttx. I would really appreciate a follow. I have not been a big Twitter user, so I need you guys to help me with that. So please take the time to go out to jasonwrighttx, find me, and follow me. I'm trying to get more active with it. And so if you'll engage with me, I'll try to do a better job of engaging with you. So I would appreciate that. And then on Instagram, I'd really appreciate a follow there. I'm at jasonrightnow. Again, my name, now. So please follow me on Instagram. And then on Facebook, I'm also at JasonWrightTX. So check us out there. I'm also on LinkedIn, so look for me there. I try to use as many platforms as possible to let you know about upcoming shows, past shows, and then also just anything that I find interesting. I'm trying to push it out and get better with the social media. So please check us out there and follow us. I would be most grateful. And also, please do not forget, it means the world to me for you to go to iTunes, give us a rating. Right now, we've got that 5-star rating. I'm hoping to hold that. Please, please, please. The comments that people are writing are so very kind. Thank you so much. It means the world to me. And that's how we keep moving up in the ranks. And right now, we're crushing it with downloads. The show has really had incredible feedback thanks to you guys. So I'm grateful. Please keep that momentum going by giving us a review on iTunes. Thanks so much and have a great day. And as always, I could not be more grateful for you listening. Thanks.